What's good, everybody, and welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Tuesday, October 16th, 2018. I'm Andrea Renee, joined by the Kinda Funny Intersite champion and future best-selling author, Alex Rubin.
Hey, thank you all for having me.
Thanks so much for coming by. Mm-hmm. When Greg told me that you were going to be on the show on Tuesday, my first reaction was, that's so awesome. My second reaction was, does that mean that I don't get to host on my first day back?
No, we're too good of friends for me to kick you off.
I know. So I was like, well, let me come by. And Greg was like, listen, I'm underwater preparing for the Kinda Funny Games showcase. He's got so much going on behind the scenes for that. He was like, how about you and Alex just do the show together? And I was like, that's the best solution ever. I'm so glad that you're here. We're going to talk a little bit about your book, which you guys can see right here on the desk. That is the Epic 8-Bit Apocalypse, The Untold Stories of Atari's Missile Command, in just a little bit. Because you have actually lots of fun stuff to talk about.
Yeah,
not just about the content of the book, but some cool promos you're doing.
Yeah.
So, but before we get to that, I want to remind you guys that this is Kinda Funny Games Daily, your source for nerdy video game news each and every weekday right here at Kinda Funny Games. You can watch us live Monday through Friday at twitch.tv/kindafunnygames. If you're watching us live, we appreciate you helping us out with just a small task, keeping us honest. That's right. We need you to go to kindafunny.com/you'rewrong and let us know what we screw up as we screw it up. If you guys can't watch it live, don't worry. You can find it on podcast services around the globe, and of course at youtube.com/kindafunnygames. If you guys haven't yet subscribed, you know what, it would be great if you subscribe to our YouTube channel. We would appreciate that. Helps us out. Every little bit counts. So thanks so much for being part of the show. Of course, kindafunny.com/kfgd is where you write in, and boy oh boy did a bunch of people write in today. Of course, Alex, you've heard about this big controversy about Rockstar Games and this statement that happened.
Yeah, we got a spicy inbox.
Oh, yes. Spicy is a great is a great word for it. A little bit of housekeeping. Extra Life 2018 is around the corner, you guys. That's right. November 3rd. Mark your calendars. Kinda Funny is going to be streaming games and shenanigans. If you guys remember last year's stream. Kevin, how many different types of alcohol and liquids were consumed out of your body cavities?
Oh man, I don't want to talk about it. I think
you just blast him immediately.
I think it was just Fernet. Was it only
Fernet exclusively?
Was it Tim and
John licked your stomach, God, but he did not consume because John doesn't drink.
Body shots. Yeah.
Well, maybe we can top it this year for the kids. That's right. It's a 24-hour stream as we raise money for the Children's Miracle Network Hospitals. Join or donate now at kindafunny.com/extralife. We would love for you guys to be part of the team. I didn't think I was going to be able to make it at first, but now I'm going to be here. I'm going to be taking a shift. So
and some shots, am I right?
Maybe not a Fernet. Maybe I'll bring something else. We'll see. Today, our show is brought to you by Hims, MeUndies, and Loot Crate, but I'll tell you guys more about that later. But for now, let's get into what is and forever will be the Roper Report. Time for some news. Alex, we've got three items on the Roper Report.
Baker's dozen! That was a lot higher than I expected, the deets. So I'm sure I'm going to get a lot of shit for that.
No, Kevin, you're the best, no matter what Greg says about you.
What?
So it's a little bit of a light news day in the aftermath of everything that happened over the weekend and yesterday, of course. But we do have some interesting stories, so let's go ahead and get started. Alex, I feel like there was more I was supposed to say about you and what you do, and I missed it. Because I was focusing on your amazing new book that just came out. But for people who don't know, Alex also works at YouTube in YouTube Gaming.
Yeah, I work on the YouTube Gaming Content Partnerships team, which is great. We help people make content better.
That's so awesome. Yeah, I was going to say, so what does that mean? And you just explained it in one easy nut that you have your elevator pitch down.
I'm golden.
Yeah. How long have you been at YouTube now?
It's been like a year and a half.
Year and some change?
Yeah, I was at Riot before that and Red Bull before that.
Because you and I met when you were just what feels like a prepubescent teen.
I probably was. Yeah, I probably
still
was.
Still the youngest person I know in video games. And I don't remember where you were working or if you were working for yourself.
I was freelance for a super long time. So before Red Bull, I was just freelancing for everywhere, which is originally how I wrote the story that was sort of the basis for this book at Polygon. So I'd write for IGN, G4, all the magazines that are now
just those
gone,
little sites, right? Yeah.
And so would just do that while I was going to college, going to high school, that type of stuff. So,
and now look at you.
Now I have a real job and I don't have to go to school anymore. I'm a published author as of today. My 10th grade English teacher, Mrs. Cross, who said I was a bad writer, she might be wrong. Or maybe she's right. I guess we'll see.
Suck it, Mrs. Cross.
I guess we'll see. I guess we'll see.
Kevin, we were on the same wavelength.
100%.
Well, you sure showed her.
I guess. Yeah. Maybe.
Do you want to like fly back to your school with your book and be like, hey, I signed this copy for you?
Yeah, she doesn't work there anymore. I definitely looked into that when I first wrote it. I thought it'd be fun to just mail her one. Yeah, sometimes you got to be like a little petty about things, but
you got to do it.
I feel like I won in the end because regardless, I actually wrote a thing that someone had to think was good.
So I'm sure lots of people are going to think it's good. Yeah. Think positively.
Oh, I'm extremely positive.
Good.
This is positive.
I'm so glad because we have some positive news. Starting now, the Roper Report, the Discord store global beta has launched today. So this write-up comes from Eurogamer by Robert Percese. The Steam-like Discord store launches its global beta today so everyone can try it out. Discord store cupboards are nowhere near as full of Steams, obviously. There are only around 20 games to straight out buy, but there are some nifty initiatives which make Discord stand out. These are First on Discord, Discord Nitro, and Universal Library features. First on Discord is what it sounds like, games with timed exclusivity to Discord. The handful of signed games aren't juggernauts, but do include Bad North, which Christian Donlan recommended in his review, which is interesting. That must be timed exclusivity on PC only, because I'm playing Bad North on my Switch and really liking it, which we can talk about in a little bit. But there's also Sinner, Sacrifice for Redemption, Minion Masters, At Sundown, and King of the Hat. Discord Nitro, meanwhile, is like Netflix or the Xbox Game Pass, where a subscription service gives you access to a catalog of games for a monthly fee. It's bumping the price of Nitro from $5 to $10 a month to reflect the growing number of games available with it. Right now, though, there are only 50 games, but some good ones. I'm not going to go through that whole list. You guys can check out discord.gg if you want to check out all of those games on Nitro. And Discord's Universal Library is a feature which launches any game on your computer. Handy, given the increasing amount of launchers, Epic, Battle, Steam, GOG, that are out there now. So that's kind of nice that you can have your Discord open and that you can just launch a game without having to go to another window.
Yeah, no, I think it's super smart. Discord's like sort of the third place for a lot of people, right? So I always have Discord open. Whereas like you can do that with Steam, right? Like you can make League of Legends launch through Steam, even though it's not bought there. But I feel like opening Steam sometimes, you never just like keep Steam open, right? Because you'd go broke if you did.
That's fair.
So it's kind of cool. It's cool that they're adding that. I feel like it's a good way to sort of keep people coming there other than when they need to call or chat with someone.
Do you think this is Discord's way of saying, hey, we hear that people like our service, but we're not really making any money right
now?
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I didn't even know that Discord Nitro included games. Maybe it just did as part of this, right? Because before it'd be like, I'm kind of surprised that people pay for that, right? Just to get like an animated icon and some random stuff. So for them, I mean, you look at the size and scale at which they're operating, like they're growing super fast.
Absolutely.
They need to find ways to monetize because I'm sure it's super expensive to run.
And I can only imagine that with the functionality of Discord and the soon to be rise of crossplay, that they're only going to continue to expand and grow at really probably an exponential rate. I always tell people that I loved using Discord when I was playing Paragon with my friends on PC, and then we were playing on PS4 because obviously there's no way to chat with those people unless you sync up in an outside client.
Yeah.
And I don't like using Skype or anything else on my phone, and Discord just makes it so seamless to be able to both text chat and voice chat and now video chat with people within the app. So this is an exciting thing. We'll have to keep an eye out. Obviously, Steam is still the king of that mountain, and I think it's going to take a really long time for anybody, if ever, to topple Steam in the digital marketplace. I mean, GOG has been working at it for a really long time and they're still in second place. But something to keep an eye on. You guys can check out that beta happening now. So don't forget to check out. We have a Discord, right? Is it discord.gg/kindoffunny, Kevin?
Yes.
You're
he
totally
so
guessing.
Confident.
This is a Joey question, isn't it?
100%. Joey!
Well, while we wait for confirmation, also, this is a great opportunity for me to remind you about kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. It is discord.gg/kindoffunny.
Or
kindoffunny.com/discord.
The double short link.
Perfect. All right, on to the next story. This is just going to be like a little bit of a blurb. We don't really have a whole lot to say about this, but I wanted you guys to know. Gen 4 arrives today in Pokemon Go. So Brian Shea over at Game Informer writes, the long wait for Generation 4 is finally over. After teasing the inclusion of Gen 4 last week, Niantic has revealed the first details surrounding Pokemon first appearing in Diamond and Pearl. Generation 4 will hit Pokemon Go in waves. The first wave hits today and includes starter Pokemon. I'm definitely going to screw these up. Turtwig, Chimchar, and Piplup? I don't know. Pokemon
it's
names
not your
are
fault.
Weird,
I'm laughing
man.
At people that name Pokemon.
I've been mispronouncing Pokemon names for my entire career on camera, so I apologize to Pokemon diehards. Where's Tim when you need him? Niantic teases that even more Pokemon will appear through wild encounters, egg hatches, raid battles in subsequent weeks, and they've also shared the following teaser image, which you can see over at Brian's article on GameInformer.com, which potentially hints at additional Pokemon included in the wave. The myriad new evolutions for past generation Pokemon do not appear to be included in this update, and Niantic has also hinted that Pokemon storage will be expanded in the future. So, if you're a big Pokemon Go fan, this is probably very exciting news for you. Alex and I discussed it ahead of the show. Neither of us are playing Pokemon Go currently, so we have nothing real to contribute.
People do, though. People play it. You see, like, those big events course. That, like, went super flawlessly that they did around the U.S., where, like, a ton of people showed up to parks in Chicago.
You're talking about the FanFest?
Yeah. Yeah. The one that they did where
they screwed up monumentally the year before. And yeah. We're like, maybe we shouldn't do that again.
Yeah. Yeah. But people still come, which is cool. Like, I feel like the fact that you can have the first one not go very good and everyone be really mad at you and then do it again and people actually still show up. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. That's a fair point.
It's good for them.
Well, have fun catching all your Gen 4 Pokemons. It's true. We're all nerds here, though, Kevin. We're nerds together.
Sure,
Star Citizen is our last item on the Roper Report. Their latest offering rakes in almost $1 million. I had to include this story because I just find it absolutely incredible, the legs this project has had. So this write-up comes from Owen S. Good over at Polygon. How much was that Star Citizen trailer this week worth? Well, nearly $1 million. Donations to the crowdfunded space combat video game, which has been in development since 2012, spiked on Wednesday, the day Cloud Imperium Games issued a 3-minute trailer for Squadron 42 from CitizenCon 2018. Robert Space Industries, the parent company, reported around $380,000 taking in on October 10th, plus another $600,000 over the next 3 days combined. Putting that in perspective, Star Citizen took in $692,000 7 weeks ago, its best in the past 2 months. The project's lifetime funding now stands, drumroll please, at $195,768,020, nearly $200 million. Let me say that again. $195.7 million from crowdfunding. The most crowdfunded venture, video game or otherwise, of all time. This week's donations may have shot up because of the announcement of the new ship in the game, the Anvil Valkyrie, which costs $330?
Real dollars.
And does not include access to Star Citizen itself. It's an in-game digital item that doesn't give you access to the game it's in.
What the fuck?
It's wild.
What the actual fuck?
I mean, I guess who would buy it if they didn't already have the game, right? But
true.
At the same time, that's wild.
But also, why not just include...
You can't even just throw in a little code.
Just throw it in. If you're buying the high-end luxury model of the car, you give the mats for free,
yeah.
Right? okay. The Anvil Valkyrie is currently available on test servers and will join Star Citizen's Persistent Universe Alpha Module. That's a mouthful. When its 3.3 update launches, there is no launch for the 3.3 update, by the way. There's no date.
So you're paying for something that they say will come out, but haven't told you when.
Clearly, people have a lot of trust in Cloud Imperium Games because they continue to give them money month over month, as we have obviously been talking about here. So Cloud Imperium began sharing a production schedule for Star Citizen and other ongoing development notes back in 2016, but hasn't committed to a launch window for any component of the game since. Star Citizen creator Chris Roberts at the time said the public and games press, quote, treated my comments nonetheless as a promise, end quote, and explaining why he was no longer giving deadlines or launch windows for its game. Of course, if you guys don't remember, Roberts pioneered Wing Commander franchise back on PC in the 90s, and Star Citizen, of course, has attracted fans from the neglected, air quotes, space combat genre when its crowdfunding campaign was announced back in 2012. So this has been in crowdfunding for 6 years, which is also wild to think about.
It's just like continually people are paying them more money for things that they're saying, we'll give you them eventually.
Yeah,
in a game that we're not going to tell you when parts of it will be finished.
I mean, the parts that are available to play must be so enticing that people just keep paying. I would love to hear from some best friends out there. If you guys have backed Star Citizen, if you're currently in the alpha module, if you have played it, you can write in to kindoffunny.com/KFGD and let us know about that experience. And, you know, I'll take a look and maybe we can review them when I'm back on Friday, or Greg can talk about it with Gary tomorrow. But this is just, I mean, I don't get it.
I've never even met anyone who has played the game, right?
Like I haven't either.
That's, I think, like the craziest part of it is it's raised so much money and it's the most successful thing. And no one I know has ever played it knows someone who played it.
The last time I think I saw gameplay for Star Citizen was like 2 or 3 years ago. And because like they never do press, which is always...
Well, they don't need to.
Well, obviously, they've made over $195 million in climbing. I was watching the brand new trailer that sparked this brand new round of crowdfunding. And I was really kind of blown away by how much, you know, name recognition talent actors are recognizable in their motion capture in the CG trailer that came out. It really is phenomenal. I think the promise of this game is so high that maybe the expectations are wildly out of control. Yeah. What do you think?
Well, I mean, totally. Like, that could totally happen. I think it's interesting to look at the $195 million and you're like, wow, that's so much. Like, that's the biggest a game or anything has ever raised, right? Via the crowd. But then you think about it and you're like, I'm sure, like, the average Destiny launch, they've said, like, that's, like, you know, $180, $200 million, something like that, right? To actually, like, make the game. And so it's kind of crazy because you, like, it seems so much, but then you compare it to some of these other games and maybe... Mm-hmm. It's like actually more in line and average. But the fact that they don't have to like market and people just continue to pay them money is like super crazy. And they have a super rabid fan base. So I'm sure like a lot of this stuff is like they're developing it with their main player in mind. So who knows? Maybe it will totally be a huge flop and it's just been like a money laundering scheme of like, come look at your digital ship.
Oh my gosh, right?
But who knows? I don't know. I think it's like pretty interesting.
Obviously time will tell on this one. I
2025 mean, when the game finally launches. 3.3 hits. Yeah.
I mean, well, we've seen some epically long, you know, development cycles on games that weren't nearly as hyped as this. Not to say, you know, I'm not trying to talk trash about a game like The Last Guardian, for example, but that game, you know, was shit.
Trash.
No, that game was in development. No, I'm not talking trash. I'm just saying that game was in development for a very long time. It was highly anticipated by its core fan base. But then when it came out, it kind of had a lukewarm reception from everybody else. I don't think that Star Citizen is going to suffer that same fate. I think that we have to hope at this point.
Positivity.
With how much money and resources they have, you know. And we, you know, it's going to come up in the reader mail a little bit later. People asking about... You know, in relationship to the crunch question in the video game development space, like how long do we expect these games to go for? Sure. How long should they be in development for? Should crunch even be a thing? Well, why don't we just make the game dev cycle longer? And like, I don't know, man.
You can't please everyone. I think we want the games now, but we want.
I think when you hit like year 7 or 8, though, you're really pushing it, right? Because then by the time you think about where you were when you started, and the fans that were supported you then, are they still the same people?
Totally.
No, you're a different person 8 years from now, right?
Yeah. No, that's like the tough thing with projects that just take a lot of time, right? It's like everyone gets hyped at the beginning, and then by the time it actually comes out, those same people might be interested in something else, right? Or even this said, like, the neglected like space combat genre, right? Like, what's to say that someone like a big AAA publisher doesn't just launch one before them that, you know, sort of does all the things that they want? Like, that's always a fear and a possibility.
Yeah.
And it's kind of crazy that they've managed to do it for what's it, like 6 years and no one else has really challenged them.
That's true, because I think the kind of game that we're seeing from, you know, the pieces of assets, trailers, and things like that, that Cloud Imperium Games has put out for Star Citizen, like, there really isn't anything else quite like that in the space. I think Eve, you know, maybe was, like, the closest, but obviously that is even waning now, and with all the controversy of what's happened with CCP and, you know, how they have changed leadership and things like that, you know, who knows where that game's gonna be. But yeah, I think AAA, if you talk about like more of a traditional release, like if EA was gonna make a Star Wars game like this, what would that look like?
Yeah,
it would look very different.
Yeah, right? No, totally. Yeah,
well, we'll have to wait and see. The release date, Alex, of Star Citizen feels just so impossibly far away. But if people wanted to know what was coming to the mom and grab digital shops today, where would they go?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kind of Funny Games Daily show hosts each and every weekday.
Good job. You nailed it.
I felt good about that.
Out today. Big Buck Hunter Arcade on Switch. Crayola Scoot on PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. X Order on Switch. Fast Striker on PS4 and PS Vita. For Honor Marching Fire Edition on PS4, Xbox One, and PC. Gnome's Garden on PS4. Heavy Fire Red Shadow on PS4. Home Sweet Home on PS4 and Xbox One. The Jackbox Party Pack on PS4. Lego DC Super Villains on PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. NBA 2K Playgrounds 2 on PS4, Xbox One, and PC. Overload on PS4. Phobos Vector Prime The First Ring on PS4. Rapala Pro Series on Switch. Starlink Battle for Atlas, which is something I definitely want to check out. PS4, Xbox One, and Switch. That, of course, is the Ubisoft's answer to the Toys to Life genre with the little spaceships. The Hunter Call of the Wild 2019 edition on PS4, and Warriors Orochi 4 on PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. New dates? Hot Wheels Rocket League RC Rivals set zooms into stores on November 1st. So if you guys haven't heard about this, this is like the actual real life RC version of Rocket League. So it's a toy set, and it features Bluetooth connected Octane and Dominus battle cars that players can control using your smart devices, as well as a Rocket League ball, custom field mat, large boost pad stations, and scoreboards. It'll run you $179.99. Honestly, this sounds like a really cool
gift. It sounds cool, yeah.
Yeah, I would love to see this in action. I wonder if they have a... Let me see if they have a trailer of this. Because like, this seems like the perfect Christmas gift for somebody. Yeah. I don't know who.
For me. This seems like the perfect Christmas gift for me.
I feel like if I bought this for myself, I would just crash that little car right away.
It's like anytime you buy a drone now and you're like, sweet, I got a drone. And then it flies up and just breaks immediately. I got these super cool... they made ones that were X-Wings and TIE Fighters, and they were like, you could fly them around, and it was super cool.
That
and they
sounds
would like,
real expensive.
They would battle, and then immediately just like crash them one time and broken. And it was such a bummer. Like, all their wings are just bent.
Oh, man.
I felt
okay. Here,
so sad.
Here, I got a little video here. I don't know if we can get this. Maybe Kevin can pull it up for me. Yeah, there it is on the big
screen.
Wait,
this is awesome. This is totally different than I thought, too.
Yeah, so this is it's a little bit smaller than I think I thought thought it was going to be, but the cars look really cute.
Well, they're Hot Wheels.
Yeah, but it's an RC set, right? But I guess I haven't like played with an RC set
look
in a really
this.
Long time. I mean, that's kind of cool.
This is
really cool.
This looks like something you'd see at like a mall.
See, now they just need to make it three times bigger and then have 3v3, right? Because you want to play with your friends and all the other cars. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Okay. I'm picking up what you're laying down, Psyonix. This is pretty neat. Thanks for pulling that up, Kevin. That is, of course, out November 1st.
That's cool.
And then Moonlighter is coming to Switch on November 5th. Deal of the day. Bridge Constructor Portal is available for 50% off on Steam, while all other Bridge Constructor titles are 75% off. So if you like constructing bridges, today is your day. All right, so let's move on to reader mail, since we have quite a few of you that have written in today. Thank you so much again, kindoffunny.com/KFGD, if you would like to be part of the show. And today, it's brought to you by Hims. Alex, did you know that 66% of men lose their hair by the age of 35? Look at that luscious hair that you have. You don't want to lose it.
Maybe, but not in 10 years.
Right? Who knows? The thing is, oh my gosh, I forget. You're so young. The thing is, when you start to notice hair loss, it's too late, Alex. It's easier to keep the hair you have than to replace the hair you've lost. And 4hims.com is your one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, sexual wellness for men. Thanks to science, baldness can be optional. Hims connects you with real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat hair loss. Well-known generic equivalents to name brand prescriptions to help keep your hair, and no waiting rooms, no awkward in-person doctor visits, and it'll save you hours by going just to 4hims.com. You can order now. Our listeners get a free trial month of Hims for just $5 right now while supplies last. You can see the website for full details, and you guys, this would cost hundreds if you went to a doctor or a pharmacy, so really want to let you know that Hims is saving you money. Again, go to 4hims.com/gamesdaily. That's FORHIMS.com/gamesdaily. And you can get that for just $5, a $5 trial month. 4hims.com/gamesdaily. Next, MeUndies. I feel like we've been talking about MeUndies on Games Daily for months. And you know why? Because MeUndies underwear are fantastic. I finally have been expanding my ladies line of MeUndies. If there are kind of honeys out there listening and you think, hey, Greg talks about his underwear all the time, but what about me and my underwear? Don't worry. MeUndies has got you covered too. And they've got these new lounge pants that are just in time for fall, made from the same micromodal fabric as their undies. And let me tell you, you guys are going to be in heaven with this super soft fabric covering your bottom half that's 3 times softer than cotton. MeUndies also love celebrating the fall season with fun Halloween prints. You guys can check out their latest jack-o'-lantern prints in undies, socks, and bralettes, which are super comfortable, by the way. And the best part, when you join the membership, you guys can get all of the stuff, the lounge pants, the tees, and the undies, and everything MeUndies makes for less than anyone else. They've got special member pricing. That's just one of the many perks for joining the membership. Of course, Kind of Funny Games Daily listeners, any first-time purchasers, when you purchase your MeUndies, you'll get 15% off and free shipping. This is a no-brainer, you guys. 15% off a pair of the most comfortable undies you'll ever put on. To get that 15% off your first pair, free shipping, and a 100% satisfaction guarantee, go to MeUndies.com/GamesDaily, MeUndies.com/GamesDaily for that special offer. And last but not least, Loot Crate is back. You guys, I love Loot Crate because they always put together a great selection of fun toys and apparel that I just don't have the time to search for on my own. And this month, of course, because we've got Halloween right around the corner, is the Nightmare Crate. Fight back against the malevolent forces with gear from Soul Calibur 2, Silent Hill, Psychonauts, and Cuphead. So what is Loot Gaming? It's a monthly subscription box delivered directly to your door with exclusive pop culture, collectibles, apparel, and gear. It curates and designs everything, and you can't find these items anywhere else. No matter what you geek out about, this is for you. Loot Crate packs $60 of value into each crate for less than $29 a month. You can't lose, and they offer 16 other awesome crates from pop culture classics, Loot Crate Gaming, to some favorites like Fallout and Halo. This crate is going to sell out, this Nightmare Crate. You guys know how many people love Halloween. We love Halloween here at Kind of Funny. Lots of people are fanatic about it. So if you guys want this, you have to order it by this week to guarantee yours, as it's going to sell out. Get the best surprises each month from the largest geek and gaming subscription company. Geek out in style with Loot Crate. Subscribe now by going to lootcrate.com/games. Enter our code, that's games, to save an exclusive 30% off your subscription. Again, one more time, lootcrate.com/games. Enter the code games. Thank you so much to those three sponsors for supporting Kind of Funny Games Daily. Now, Alex, we have got some reader mail, but before we get into that, I want to talk about your book.
Yeah.
I have a reader mail question for you.
Okay.
So this book, the title, again, yes. Kevin, if we can get that close up on the book, The Untold Story of Atari's Missile Command.
Yeah.
So I've been teasing you about being very young, but Missile Command.
It's an old game.
It's not a young game. Yeah. So where was your interest? How did you kind of settle on this as your topic for wanting to write about?
Yeah, it's a great question. I was actually at GDC one year, and Dave Toyer, the subject, got honored for his contributions to games because he's a super interesting guy. He made Missile Command, Tempest, and iRobot, and all three of those games were like pretty groundbreaking. Like Missile Command used a trackball and was one of the first color games. Tempest was the first vector game, or one of the first vector games. And then iRobot was the first 3D game ever. And he did those and then never made another game. He just like left.
Poof, gone.
And I thought that was interesting. Like, why? And so it turned out he was like, in making Missile Command, was haunted by nightmares of nuclear war.
Oh, no. It's terrible.
For, like, every single day he'd like go to sleep and just like see dreams of like missiles coming in and just like blowing his town up, which was like horrifying and super crazy.
Yeah.
And so I thought it was interesting. So I tracked him down and wrote a piece for Polygon in 2013 just about that aspect of it. And then as it was published, people kept coming to me saying, there's an interesting story on this or that, all related to Missile Command. So I decided to expand it out into a book, make it about Atari and sort of the state of games at the time, how the industry sort of formed, all as a nice wrapper to the cool story of Missile Command.
So if I know zero about Missile Command, am I still going to enjoy
You're
this
fine.
Book?
Yeah. Yeah, it's great.
Wonderful.
It talks about a lot of stuff from Atari. There's even a section on Spec Ops The Line in there because similar vibes. You can totally enjoy it even if you have never played Missile Command.
Did you learn something about the game, you know, in this process that really surprised you or shocked you?
That's a great question, too. I think in general, the thing that was most surprising to me is just how much the game resonated with people. Like, most people don't know the story of Missile Command. Like, he made a game that is purely defensive because he didn't want, like, at the time in the Cold War, for you to be attacking other people. And so most people don't know that, though. They're just like, sweet, let's defend our, like, towns from these missiles coming in. So I thought that was kind of cool. And it was cool just how many, like, little random things they used to do at Atari back in the day that they could get away with just because it was one person making a game. Like, I guess I didn't really realize that either, because teams for games now are so big, right? Like,
right.
Thousands of people. That back in the day, you just come up with an idea, or they even had, like, books of ideas that you could just take and make into a game. You just spend 6 months, make your game, and then it would come out, which is crazy.
Did you get wrapped up at all or have any kind of perspective on the kind of controversy that happened at GDC with Atari last year?
With Nolan Bushnell?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, he was interesting. I actually interviewed him for the book also. So I interviewed him and Al Alcorn, who's the creator of Pong, who was there pretty early. Yeah, not really. It didn't super fit in with sort of the overall story of the book. But it was definitely interesting. I thought Nolan in general is a really interesting guy. Like, he obviously is very famous, has done a lot of like cool stuff, like starting Atari and Chuck E. Cheese, and is very visionary. Like,
I didn't realize he started Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah, it's super. Yeah, he wanted it as a place for people to play arcade games that was okay for kids, because back when they first started Atari, it was mostly in bars. And sometimes even like CD bars. So people didn't want to take their kids there, but they wanted them to be able to play games.
CD bars with arcade cabinets. Yep. Sounds like my kind of joint.
So that was kind of like the reason he started that. But it was just interesting because he's always been someone who, even though he's like loud and very like, I'm the greatest, at sometimes is willing to pull back and sort of like remove himself from the spotlight to help ease things. So I thought that was interesting about that, is he sort of withdrew from the award himself, trying not to be a distraction. But it's not really in the book because it didn't super tie into...
It was a parallel storyline.
Yeah, and he got out of Atari before Missile Command actually came out. So he was fired in 1978. The game didn't come out until 1980. So yeah, he was definitely an interesting person to interview.
Well, this all sounds super fascinating. Obviously, the book is being published today. Where can people pick this book up?
Yeah, it's out in bookstores everywhere. So your local bookstore might have it, Barnes & Noble, Amazon. Amazon's a great place. They're running a sale right now too, so it's super cheap.
Oh,
I think
nice.
It lists for like $26, and right now it's like $16. There's like a coupon. So that's cool. I'm sure we'll have the link somewhere.
Oh yeah, we're definitely putting the link in the description. If you're listening on podcast services and you're like, I want to check this book out, when you're in a safe place, if you're not driving, you know, you can click that link in the description, of course, on YouTube as well.
Yeah, and so it's available globally too. So there's a lot of places that will ship wherever you are, which is nice. And there's a Kindle version. Audiobook's not out yet, but news hopefully around the timing on that. So yeah. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, 1767 on Amazon.com. Well, congratulations. And thank you've got some pins here that you have brought with, some 8-bit apocalypse pins, which I think Kevin's going to hook up the Skycam so you can show off for us. Cam. Yeah, there we go.
Whoa, there we go. Yeah, so.
Show it on this camera here.
Oh
yeah.
Even better.
Let me just move this to the side here.
Yeah, there it is.
There we go.
Look at that.
Yeah,
so that's
one. I have these pins that I made as part of sort of the launch bonus. So they're all Missile Command themed. This one, similar to the front cover, is reflective of the end of the game. When you lose, you just blow up in a nuclear blast and it says the end. So all of these, I'm actually giving away for free if you buy the book this week. So if you buy the book this week, I'll send you one of them. And if you buy a couple books for your friends, maybe family members for Christmas, other gamer friends, whether that's Kindle or hardcover or whatever, I'll send you a whole set. So I have that, and then I'm also giving away an arcade cabinet as part of that.
You guys, when he said that this morning, I was like, oh, is it like one of those cool little mini ones? And he's like, no, it's like an arcade cabinet.
Yeah, I think it's like this high. Yeah, it's cool. They just came out this week. This company, Arcade 1-Up, is doing a ton of like 12-in-1 arcade units. So I figure I'll send that to anyone in the U.S. There's a contest if you go to my website, alexrubens.com, or I think it's like a bit.ly/8-bit bonus.
Let me check this out.
And you can go there, and there's a lot of information about how you can win.
Bonus.
So technically, you don't even have to buy the book.
Something's wrong here.
But you can get
8-bit bonus is not it.
It'll work by the time this comes out.
AlexRubens.com. And of course, we will put all of that information in the description. So if you guys are interested in submitting to potentially win the cabinet, which is a super awesome giveaway. And of course, you want to get your pins, you got to buy the book this week. This is, there it is right there. Kevin pulled it up for us.
Oh.
Oh, man. Hold on.
He's going to switch it over here so everyone on YouTube can see. Ooh, there it is. And now you get those close-ups of the of the pin designs. So how do you get all four of those again?
Buy three copies.
Buy three copies. There you go.
Yeah, so it's cool. And if you scroll down, you can even see what the cabinet looks like if you get down far enough. You can scroll past all this stuff. There's also some other bonuses in there, too. So giving away a copy of a yet unannounced short story that I'm doing after this. So I'm working to make the making of a game that I think people will find pretty interesting, indie game. So you'll get a copy of that if you buy it this week. And then if you buy a couple copies, you can also get a documentary, which is cool.
Look at all the stuff you're giving away. That's fantastic.
I know. Trying to bring value to the people.
You know what? You are a good man, sir. You are a very good man. All right. Well, congratulations again on the launch of 8-Bit Apocalypse. Again, alexrubens.com if you guys want to participate in any of these awesome special bonuses that he's doing. Now let's get into some of your questions because we've got some good ones. Alex, have you been playing Assassin's Creed Odyssey?
I tried it a little bit, actually. Yeah. So I played like the opening, but maybe only 20 minutes.
Okay, that's barely just the opening. D. Smitty from Rhode Island writes in, "Hi, Andrew. What's good? Glad to have you back. I miss you dearly." Oh, thanks. My question, how have you handled the grind of AC Odyssey? Have you used the boost? Are you playing on an easier difficulty? Do you feel the leveling is balanced? Or do you believe it may push the player towards purchasing boosts? I'm in awe of the world and feel the exploration is what makes the grind enjoyable. Also, what's your favorite armor? I'm loving the different looks my Cassandra has. Thanks for the incredible content you create and welcome back. So you have a lot of questions here.
Yeah,
and I think, Kevin, you got to cue yourself up because you've been playing quite a bit too.
So fucking much.
Yeah. So I heard you talking with Greg about how you've crossed the 75-hour mark, which is very impressive and I'm jealous of. I did bring my PS4 with me to Italy. Did not turn it on once though.
It's probably better.
Yeah, no, it was the first vacation I've had with my mom. I realized it was the longest amount of time, consecutive days, I've spent with my mom since I moved out of the house with her.
That's wild.
Yeah. I was like, dang, Mom, we need to spend more time together. So I'm a little bit behind. I'm only about 40 hours in. So I know I'm kind of still like scratching the surface there, but I'm level 26 now. So I've been kind of mainlining the story right now and kind of putting the side stuff away, even though the side content in the game is really fantastic. And I love how it helps color in your experience in the main storyline. Like if you do this side quest, it can affect the main storyline this way, which I really love that they did. So to your question, D. Smitty, about the grind. So when I played Assassin's Creed Origins, I played it on easy, specifically so I could run through the game faster.
Yeah.
This time I was like, I'm going to play it on normal. Have not bought a boost yet. The only money I've spent in the game has been to buy the Pegasus skin because I really like it, even though the unicorn skin with the rainbow trail on the feet is really good too. Oh, I switched between them. I also did buy the Spartan Renegade armor set, which is my favorite armor set in the game. It's an all exotic or epic armor set, and so I've just been upgrading it because it's like it reminds me so much of the Kratos uniform from God of War. Kevin, have you seen this armor set? Yes, that's it. That's the one.
Oh, that's cool.
So what's really cool about it is that not only is it the one shoulder harness, but it's also the chains, the wrap and the chain on the forearms for the gauntlets.
That's pretty cool.
It's really cool. And if you wear all five pieces of that armor set, you get a 50% crit damage bonus. Which is obviously fantastic. That's a great bonus. So I did buy that armor set and I've been spending a lot of resources to upgrade it and I really enjoy it. But like with any RPG, you kind of got to wear like a motley assortment of armor. Because
sure.
So
upsetting.
Yeah, you know, you're like dismantling or selling pieces and just wearing what's the highest level. But
yeah, I got the, was it the epic? No, the timeless.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, there was
that's
part
a nice
of,
set too.
It was I really like the aesthetic of it because it's really simple and I've been upgrading. That's like the only armor that I've been upgrading. But yeah, I'm constantly having to change different like helmets and stuff. And so yeah, right now if you look at my guy, it's like, why are you wearing all that like shit that does not match?
Yeah, and I'm not a fan of the helmets that have like the full metal faces on them. Mm-hmm. And I finally found a crown, which I love, but it's just like a basic crown and it's like not even legendary.
So hard.
And I'm just like, oh, but it looks so cool. I hate masking her face. And I know I think there's a toggle where you can toggle the helmet off.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm having a great time. I haven't felt that the grind feels grindy. And this is from a diehard Destiny player. So I know what grind feels like. But I do like how they incentivize you to play the side content because of narrative reasons and not just because, oh, the next guy that you have to fight in the story is two levels above you.
Yeah.
And so you could go after him, but it'll be tough, or you can grind.
Sure.
I don't feel like it's like I have to go find stuff to do to grind artificially. I'm glad to do it. I'm glad to go check out this island where maybe there's, you know, a chest with a cool new piece of gear in it that I wouldn't have found out about, you know?
So many, like, cool, random little, like, hey, go do this. And it's like, oh, that'll be easy. And then you get there and it's like, well, you have to do these two things. And it's like, okay, I'll do it. I'm in. No,
yeah, I know what you're saying. But to the question on the boosts, I don't think that the boosts are necessary at all. I know that the boosts have been pretty controversial. I was out of the country when like this all dropped and everybody was very upset about the boosts, but you don't have to buy those boosts. Like the game does not tell you you have to. It's a really a personal choice, and that's what the beauty of Assassin's Creed and the microtransactions that are in the game. You don't have to buy them. I don't understand why people get so upset, especially in a game that does not have a PvP component at all. It's just about how you want to play your game.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And I think like it's cool too to see that the side quests feel valuable to you, because a lot of times what people complain about is the boost being in there to sort of like not need to play them when the side quests are just sort of padding. So it's like weird because they make missions that they know you won't want to do. So it's cool that these are ones that are actually valuable.
Yeah. I mean, and I get the concern, you know, kind of reminds me of the conversations that we had around Middle Earth Shadow of War when that game came out and there was a big kind of kerfluffle around the microtransactions and how they could speed up process by adding in these, you know, these legendary orcs into your army and how it affected the Nemesis system. I think this is a different case because that game felt overwhelmingly repetitive, and so you kind of were more incentivized to buy the microtransactions. Sure. I have not had that in Assassin's Creed Odyssey at all. Kevin, have you felt the need to buy boosts in your 75 hours?
No, actually, I haven't. And earlier, Greg was like, oh, I can get you the code. And I was like, you know what? I don't need it. And right now, so I was told that around level 25, there's a big jump where you have to, like, grind to get to level 32.
Mm-hmm.
I never, like, mission-wise, like...
Oh, I haven't got that yet.
I think I skipped through that, because whatever mission... I've never had a problem where it's like, oh...
That's because you're probably balancing your time between...
I don't think I'm balancing.
Exploring side content.
I'm doing so much side content exploring.
Good, though, right?
I love it.
Why not?
I love it. It's been fantastic. It just... yeah, so I haven't had that issue at all. Right now, I'm doing, like, the, like, mythical creatures...
I haven't fought a single mythical creature yet. I'm kind of like hoping that it's going to happen soon because now I'm like level 26 and I haven't come across one in the story yet.
You have to go to a certain area to like get it.
Like unlock it or whatever?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll talk afterwards.
And the last one, like it says that you have to be level 50 and I was like, I'm level 46. It'll be fine. Oh man.
Did you get crushed?
Yeah, and I you know how it auto saves? I'm like I might have to load a different save to get out of
No, the scum save.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
No, I love that about that. And I remember during Origins when I always run into this problem during fall release season where we just have so many games to try to cover and I had to kind of shelve Origins for a little bit. And then they did those time released of those special Egyptian gods that came out and that were super high powered. And I was like, gosh, I'm so far away from being able to go and like actually have
it's
a chance
at
that.
48 and it's like,
yeah,
oh, man,
I was like, nope,
I'm
not
level
for me.
Like 16. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I mean, I think this comes back to the idea of providing, you know, hardcore players with some end game content to strive for and to give people a lot of content for the dollar point, the price point. I mean, the idea that there is easily 100 hours of content
easily
for $60 is
so
fantastic.
Much, like 77 hours in and there's still so much on my map.
Yeah.
Can't put this game down.
I know, it's so good.
Yeah.
I'm so glad people have come around because I was such a champion for Origins last year and I felt like a lot of people were on the fence, but they've made some really smart choices with how they've improved from Origins to Odyssey. And I'm really loving how they've really come back to some core tenets of the franchise. I saw some people being like, this doesn't feel like an Assassin's Creed game. And I go, well, then you don't play enough Assassin's Creed if you don't think this is an Assassin's Creed game. Because I just run across the rooftops. It reminds me playing of Ezio and I get into fights with too many guards and it reminds me of playing, you know, like in like Assassin's Creed 3 and 4 era. I just like there's so much that reminds me of like the old classics in this franchise that makes me really excited about the new direction and all the new things they're adding to reinvigorate it. I'm going to talk about this more at length on What's Good Games, which is out on Friday, but I don't want to spend the whole time of our reader mail talking about Assassin's Creed.
Can I ask one quick question?
Yes.
Which game do you think you're enjoying more, Odyssey or Origin?
Definitely Odyssey.
Yeah, me too.
I loved Bayek and Aya. I loved that story.
Yeah.
Odyssey blows it out of the water.
Yeah.
Narratively, like, in gameplay-wise, like, it just, it's not even a contest.
Everything is tighter. Everything,
yeah. It's just better. And Origins was a great game. It was like
fantastic.
My number two game from last year.
I really enjoyed it as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
this year. Yeah,
exactly. So good. All right. Next question. Let's see here. Is there one on there that stands out to you? We've got quite a few here. You can just say the name of the person.
Yeah, do Jordan Gibson.
All right, Jordan Gibson. So with Sony not having a PSX this year, do you think this is a sign that Sony isn't working on any more PS4 titles and is currently working on PS5 titles and they don't have anything to announce since the PS5 hasn't been revealed yet? Why, Jordan, that is a very astute observation that you have made. Yes, I think that this is absolutely correct. Obviously, we know that PS4 titles are still in the pipeline. We've got The Last of Us Part 2. We've got Ghost of Tsushima. We've got Days Gone, which No one's talking about it. It's supposed to be out in just a couple of months or early next year. So they clearly have a lot of stuff to talk about when it comes to PS4, but they've talked about it. Right, E3 was their big tentpole first party. Look at all of the first party goods. And I think what it comes down to is them internally going, hey, do we want to have another showcase where we only talk about third party and don't talk about first party? But then we just talked about first party. Do we want to talk about it again? And it sounds like, you know, the argument won out that, hey, we just talked about all of our big first party stuff at E3. Let's just push it, which is kind of a bummer because I think, you know, the PlayStation partner team does a lot of great work, and we've seen that throughout the life cycle of the PS4. And I'm not just saying that because that's the team my husband works on. I'm saying that as somebody who's played a lot of third party games on my PS4 versus playing them on my Xbox One.
Sure. Yeah. And I think it's just really expensive to run a show like that,
yes,
right? Like,
that too.
You have to think about it. Like, they don't really need to do it, to spend that money, right? Like, they've already, like they said, E3 was their big moment. They've already showed their games off. They might as well just save the money, give their developers time to work on stuff for next E3 or the other shows that they do throughout the year, and just keep going through, right? Like, they don't gain a ton from doing it other than, like, continued high fan sentiment, like giving the fans something cool to do.
Right.
But how much fun would you have if they didn't have a ton of stuff to show, right? You, like, if you're looking at the what they've done in previous years, they rely on some big games to be like their tent poles, right? Like, Spider-Man was always one of the big things at PSX, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if that's already out, and maybe some of these other games, like you mentioned, they've already been showing lots of parts of, or they don't want to show a lot before the game comes out, there might not be as much for fans to do that's like as big as it was in years past. So yeah, I just don't think they had a ton to gain from it, regardless of whether they're working on PS5 titles or not.
No, you're absolutely right. And I don't think it is something that needs to happen every year. I think about an expo like D23, Disney's Fan Expo, and that's not every single year. And, you know, maybe PlayStation is looking at that kind of a cadence with their fan event, saying, hey, maybe we don't do this every year. Maybe we do it only on the years where it makes sense. Kind of like how Nintendo does the Nintendo World Championships, just kind of randomly, whatever they feel like it. You know, there's no like rhyme or reason as to when that's gonna happen. And maybe Sony's like, why don't we just spend the money and make a fan expo on the years that it makes sense to do so, and then the years it doesn't, just say, nope, not this year.
And it makes it more special when they finally do, right? Like, if PSX comes back when PS5 comes out, that'll be super cool. Huge, right?
Gosh, I hope it's not that far away. PS5 is not until at least 2021, right?
Well, maybe it's like the lead up to it, right? To get people hyped on it.
Like the announcement ahead of time? Well, we will see. But if you guys were looking for a place where video game developers could talk about their game announcements, man, the Kinda Funny Game Showcase. Craig is working hard on it right now as we speak.
Crazy.
It's, I think he was not prepared, Kevin, for how much work it is.
We all told him.
But he does have quite an amazing lineup of stuff that he's putting together, and we'll be working with him on it. It's going to be good. More details, of course, on that in the coming weeks. Next question. This one comes from... So we have like three separate questions about Rockstar. Let me see which one I want to start with. Ryan says, Andrea, I saw on Twitter you are retweeting crunch stories after the Rockstar news. In light of this, would you be prepared to wait longer for games to prevent this? And do you think the industry should unionize, as is so often suggested? Ryan, I have been retweeting this because I think there's a lot of people out there providing some really interesting perspectives, particularly people who work in the field of development and some people who have responded to me and to what I've been tweeting about. I obviously don't know what it's like to make a video game. I've never made one. So I have to trust the people who work in video game offices to relay their experiences. And when I tweeted the quote, or I quote tweeted a gamesindustry.biz's article about Mr. Hauser's, you know, 100-hour work week quote, I left it open-ended. I used a bunch of maybes because we don't know what the situation is. And quite frankly, Mr. Hauser probably doesn't know what the situation's like inside of his studios on the at the ground level, right? Executives like that don't see the day-to-day operations the way that their managerial staff underneath them sees it. I mean, first and foremost. So when he, you know, made a rebuttal speaking about his experience and his small writing team working these long weeks or these long hour weeks for a short duration of time, I don't think it's fair or a smart assumption to say, oh, well, he was just talking about his team. Everything's good to go. Because I've heard from developers who've worked at Rockstar, and I've heard from developers who work at other companies who say, yeah, that's not true. We do crunch, and crunch is brutal and hard and terrible, but it's also really complicated. And I thought, you know, Greg had a really great discussion yesterday about it, talking about how it's such a unique cultural thing, depending on which country you live in and the type of industry that you work in, and how crunch is viewed differently. And it's only now recently that we're trying not to glorify crunch, because it used to be something that you wore as a badge of honor. Mm-hmm. You know, and it still is. You think about these people who play video games for thousands of hours and say, I remember when I was proud of the fact that I had played Skyrim for like 350 hours and these people like parachute in on my like, look at how much I've played Parade, and they're like, bitch, I've played Skyrim for 2,000 hours. Yeah. And I'm like, all right, that's cool. I mean, like, I have other stuff to do in life. So yeah. And it always turns into this competition. And when you put that competition in the workplace, talking about how many hours you can put in on a project, it gets really dangerous.
Totally. Well, and there's some like guilt, right? Like if one team's crunching really hard, right, and they're staying late, or even people on your same team, if you're like, okay, guys, it's 5:01, see you later.
Punching out, yeah.
Yeah, you'd like feel bad or like be scared that maybe people would turn against you or something like that, right? So it's really easy to see how like even some select teams doing it can sort of perpetuate into all teams doing it, right? Or more people than are actually necessary, just working hard to get it done.
Absolutely.
But then it also doesn't make a ton of sense, because if you're working that long, the amount of strain that it puts on you, you're not working at your best, right? So it might be like a self-fulfilling prophecy of why you have to work so much, right? Is because you're never operating at full capacity.
Absolutely. And it's obviously very different for each project, and each company is in a different situation. But I think, you know, universally we can agree that working for 100 hours in a single 7-day period is not healthy for anybody, yeah. No matter what you're doing. But, you know, sometimes, you know, the job needs to get done. And if you need to crunch to get it done, that's one thing. But I think the reason why people got up in arms is because video games in particular has made this a culture. Crunch is part of the culture of video games. And we are hearing from people about how to, you know, how do we fix this? How do we talk about changing the culture and saying we want to move away from incentivizing people either, you know, financially or, you know, just with like in office praise about working long hours, and say, hey, you can do your best work working 50 hours a week.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. You don't have to be here for 10 plus hours a day, 6 or 7 days a week. I mean, I think that's what, you know, there's been so much chatter about it. I have a very long write in here from Herman Howe talking about Rockstar and their budget for GTA 5, holding the highest budget for a video game ever, comparing it to some blockbuster movies here. And basically what his point is, you know, coming down to, is startups doing crunch is bad, but the makers of the single highest grossing piece of media in history is inexcusable. I don't care if they say it was just the higher ups who had to. Nobody should. Hire more contractors for the final polish. Budget games better. Pay the developers more. Execs earn way too much money. How are we not talking about this? And he goes on to do more of the math about how GTA 5 has grossed more than $6 billion. And then rounding up to how many people are on the GTA 5 team. And, you know, if we split that out, how much would they get? I'm like, listen, this, I mean, I appreciate all the math you did, Herman, but that's just frankly not how money in corporations works. You know, the gross budget doesn't go split evenly across the team, really, literally in any situation, particularly in the United States. That's not how it works. But you're right, though, that it doesn't seem fair, which seems to be your underlying bottom line in this whole conversation.
It is easy to like make that claim while looking at literally like one of the most successful games of all time, though, right? And being like, there's so much excess money than the people that were
paying
here.
Where did this money go? Right?
Yeah, it's like, yeah, it's sold so many copies. It's not a great comparison, right? Because you look at most games don't sell that well, right? Like, I would assume most games don't make all their money back or, like, don't do well enough to, like, warrant further investment on some of those. So you look at something like when Square Enix says, oh, Tomb Raider needs to sell this many copies for us to want to keep doing them, right? You look at that and I'm like, that's successful, right? That's a successful game. And it's still probably hard to make that comparison. Because if companies are saying like, oh, we don't have enough money to keep doing these, or it's not as worth it for us to keep doing these things, you can't just say like, well, what if we further split it amongst more people?
Right?
I'm sure some studios too do split it and like give people royalties as part of their pay, right? I'm sure it's not just everyone has a salary and they do share in some of the upside there. But it's just really tough to say that we should do that across the board using the example of one of the most successful games of all time.
We definitely shouldn't use GTA 5 as an example because it's such an anomaly. And I'm so glad that you brought that up. But I think that, you know, it's a difficult conversation because I think the gut reaction from a lot of people when that quote was clearly taken out of context by a lot of people was that, you know, you're glamorizing the fact that you've worked this many hours. And I included was like, well, why can't, I felt like you did, Herman. I was like, why can't you just bring on more people?
Sure.
And I actually had a really interesting analogy in my Twitter timeline from @MorphmanSL, who says, working in IT myself, I can tell you that it's not about the amount of people who work on it. Try writing a poem. Then try writing a third of a poem, taking over from another person who wrote the first third and will finish it after using specifications from a third person. Then imagine doing that, but the poem is written in a coded language and is 15,000 lines long and takes 20 months to write. And you're 10,000 lines and 19 months in. Will it help to bring in more people? Will the poem be better? And so I wrote back certainly saying, I understand your point. You know, are you saying that there will always be crunch because of this and that there's no solution? And Morphman wrote, not always, but due to the nature of big scale programming work, crunch happens a lot. There are a lot of reasons for it, not knowing exactly how it will turn out, underestimating time, unexpected sicknesses. But no, in 50 years, nobody has found a catch-all solution. And I thought that was really kind of fascinating to hear about from a different perspective and saying, you know, you can't just bring contractors in because there are specific positions in video game development that you can't just like hire for.
Yeah, or if you can, like you might look at it and say, this needs to be done in the next 3 weeks. It's not like you can just like grab people and get them trained up to do the work in those 3 weeks, right? Like,
right.
You can't even get people started on stuff that fast, let alone to actually know exactly the type of thing you're doing. Like you said, like you can't just say like, we want to do this. Do that in the next 3 weeks for people who have no prior context for what the work might be.
Absolutely.
It's hard, yeah.
And you were talking to me about a story that you found out when you were doing research for your book.
Yeah, no, it's in the book. The guy who made Missile Command, Dave Toyer, he worked really hard at Atari. Most people did. They would stay there all the time, mainly because they wanted to. Like, they kind of liked being around other people, and they would goof off so much that a lot of times they had to stay to get their work done. It was a little different than, like, we have to scale up these teams. But they would have to put games out so quickly, like 6 months a lot of times, that they just
That's
needed
wild.
To stay and do it. And so he, at one point, trying to get a board made so that they with the game on it so that they could go test it, worked for 96 hours straight.
That's terrible.
His hands stopped working, like he couldn't figure out how to type, so he actually had to call someone to come type for him to finish it in time.
Instead of just saying, maybe I should like go to a doctor.
Yeah, well, it's because it needed to be out tomorrow,
right?
Maybe I
should stop working.
It was crazy.
And sleep will fix that.
Right?
It'll be fine.
Yeah.
Just go back to sleep and then you remember. We've all been there.
Yeah. And so,
Kevin, your hands have stopped working because you've been awake for so long?
I don't know. I've done 36 hours straight here twice now.
Why?
That's crazy.
Because computers were fucking breaking or we were trying to get the studio set. It just sometimes, very rarely, it needs to happen, and like there's no one else that can do certain things.
And like I completely understand those situations that are out of your control where you have to crunch because some kind of emergency happens.
Or a big event.
I feel like that's not really what we're talking about here. That crunch in the way that colored in the Rockstar situation here is us talking about a systemic industry-wide thing that's built into your production schedule.
Yeah, the problem is with games is like the big event is the game coming out. So there's like major deadlines and massive changes that can happen unexpectedly.
Right.
Same with like movies. Mm-hmm. Like when Paula's, you know, works at ILM, and when they're doing stuff, sometimes like crunches go really, really long. She's had 100-hour work weeks, and it is because client reached out and said, "Hey, this shot that needs to be done by the end of the month, we're changing it dramatically." And it's like, well, the deadline can't move. You just need to throw more people at it. And the problem with games is they take so long to develop that, like, it isn't 6 months that they're working on, like, the movies. It's years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think the kind of takeaway from everything that's happened is that we first and foremost hope people are being compensated for their crunch. That, you know, that they're giving an out if they can't crunch because of family obligations or if they just don't want to crunch. You know, and that hopefully crunch culture will ease up at the very least. Baby steps. I don't anticipate it going away anytime soon, but hopefully more and more studios are going to take steps to kind of try to remedy that. In fact, I saw a story today on Sega that has committed to reducing developer crunch. They are going to reduce long overtime hours by 80%. So that was a really great headline to read in there. So this write-up comes from Game Revolution from Haru Nicole over there. And the company's annual report, Sega stated that it has taken steps to reduce development crunch. This is noteworthy, obviously, regarding this conversation we're having right now. In their annual report, the company revealed there's been committed efforts to this as early as 2013. The most noteworthy statistic that the report has disclosed is that it has reduced the number of employees working over 80 hours per month by 80 to 90%. Sega has hit this milestone through various measures. So great to hear that at least one company has been like, yo, sure. How can we do like a small part to reduce this? And hopefully we'll hear more of these stories in the coming months and years and ways that they're addressing developer crunch. All right, maybe one more quippy. Yeah. What do you think, Alex?
Are there any scary games you're going to play this Hallows Eve from Chris?
That's a great one. Yes, I'm so glad you picked that one because this is where I'm going to give myself a little promotional plug. If you guys missed What's Good Games special scary Let's Play series, Lights Off, when we released it last year on Facebook, you can catch it on our YouTube channel now, youtube.com/What's Good Games. And we are doing a special Lights Off live stream on Saturday, October 27th. We, of course, are going to be at TwitchCon, which I'll talk about more later in the week and next week. On Friday, where we're debuting an episode of a new series they're doing. But if you guys want to join in our fun spooky times, we'll have more details at whatsgoodgames.com very shortly. Which game we're gonna play specifically, I'm sure Brittany's gonna try to make me play some kind of Resident Evil. But do you like scary games? Are you into the horror genre?
I don't like dislike them. Like, I'm not a person who's like, I hate scary games.
Yeah,
it's just like a lot of those games like aren't super fun for me. Because it's like about the tension and I like...
because they're terrible?
I don't get tense on it. Like,
you don't?
No, I'll just like sit there like, okay, I'm moving slowly and there's stuff happening.
So
like,
you don't get scared is what you're saying?
Yeah, not really.
Like, really?
Yeah, that stuff like doesn't...
I'm jealous. I freak out.
I fucking hate it. I hate it so much.
Oh. Too, Kevin.
I more get like it's blood and guts that gets me or like broken bones.
Okay.
That's the type... But I wouldn't be scared. I'm just like, ooh, like I don't like that.
Gruesome nature.
Yeah, it's so I don't get super scared. So I actually like games like Until Dawn. I thought that was like a fun, scary game, and I'll probably just
like Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a fun, scary movie. Yeah. I mean, it kind of is. Yeah.
Cabin in the Woods was fun.
Yeah, it was. It was just cheeky enough to like take you out of the really horrifying parts of that movie.
Sure.
And I kind of like, that's the kind of horror that I can get into. And I like watching horror movies because I can always cover my eyes or plug my ears when it gets too intense.
Sure.
But when you're playing a game, you can't. And so when we were shooting this series last year, what I noticed through the many, many hours of time code editing that I had to do for this series was that Brittany screams with her eyes open.
Which, terrifying.
And what everybody else, like me and Steimer and everybody else I've ever seen, screams like you close your eyes and you kind of like tense up because like it's a natural reaction to want to be away from what's scaring you. But Brittany stares straight at it and screams with her eyes like wide open.
I would probably do that. If something popped out and scared me and I was like, I have to fight or flight, I'd probably want my eyes to be open so I know what's going on.
Yeah.
That would probably be, yeah, that's interesting. I say that, but I probably like scream like this. Like,
we don't really all know until you're put into the situation. But there's obviously a lot of great scary games out there. I've got all of the Five Nights at Freddy's downloaded. We've got Outlast, which is like one of the ones I hate because it's a game where you have to run away from stuff. You can't actually fight them. She's got, they played Slender Man.
Makes me so uncomfortable,
Yeah, that one, like, I don't know what's so scary about that.
You don't
but
think it's scary? Or?
No, no, okay, I mean, like, I it like, is, but, okay, like, hey. I understand while simultaneously also being like, why does this scare me? It's just jump scares.
Yeah.
I think it's just, like, the audio design, the way that they set it up. But, yeah, so if you guys have some favorite scary games that you would like us to consider or you think that we should try out, tweet to me at Andrea Renee. Let me know what scary games we should check out. All right, we are going to end reader mail and head into You're Wrong. Wait, before that, we got to squad up. This is where we ask you to send in your PSN IDs, your Xbox Live gamer tags, your Steam IDs, or friend codes if you actually have a friend code that you know off the top of your head. If you do, I'm very impressed. And the Kind of Funny Best Friends go out to you and help you in whatever game you are playing. And today, we have got K to the Riss. That's right. Chris is back. Golden Boy 1910. Happy Tuesday, Andrea and Alex. So this is my second time asking for a squad up. The first time was a success related to that fucking Division Platinum trophy. This time I'm looking for just more friends on PlayStation in general. I'm a Marine recruiter and work 10 to 12 hour workdays, so my gaming time is usually late at night. So if there's anyone that is in the same predicament, that would be awesome if we could just squad up and have some fun. I can't wait for RDR2 and I play a lot of different games. My PSN ID is Golden Boy 1910, just like it sounds. Golden Boy 1910. So if you guys want to play with Golden Boy late at night, I guess it depends which time zone you're
in. Yeah, that's true. That
which time zone are you in, Chris? Because if you're in East Coast, late at night is, you know, that's early time for us here on the West Coast. You guys can check him out. Thank you to all of the best friends out there for reaching out to everybody who squads up. I know that Greg has been doing an ongoing bad PSN IDs because bad PSN names because they're getting rid of them. But I didn't see one on the dock today. So if it's there and I missed it, that's on me. I'm sorry, friends.
I can tell you mine. Mine's just my name. So if people get really mad, they'll just tweet at me or like tell me stuff that they see on Twitter.
So do you have to like lock down your account because everyone can find you?
No, it's super. I basically have never checked my PlayStation friends list since it came out.
Seriously?
Yeah, I mean, like, there's not a ton of like multiplayer games other than like a Call of Duty or something that I would play on PlayStation.
You're a PC player, right?
Yeah, mostly like PC. Or Destiny, I played on Xbox before, which is weird to think about. But yeah, so mine was my name. So if I just angered people, they'd like tweet at me, still angry, which was a little odd. And so I'm ready to change it
to something
else.
You must have really gotten him mad. Yeah, I like my gamer tag. It's nice. I thought about making Andrea Renee my gamer tag at one point, but then I had this exact thought that I was like, you know what? I actually like being kind of gender agnostic and neutral when I play in online spaces, which is nice for me because if I go into like a team voice chat, they don't know if I'm a male
you
or
could
female.
Be a 10-year-old.
I could be a 10-year-old.
10-year-old boy, yeah.
They don't know. But I'm not. All right. Let's see here. What did we screw up today, Alex? How bad do you think it is?
Probably pretty bad.
Probably pretty bad. All right, let's see. Greg didn't clear the corrections from yesterday.
Son of a bitch.
What is he doing back there?
I hate him.
He's playing Ghostbusters. That's what he's probably doing. Here we go. Here's the first one. okay, technically, Kebabs has the first one. I distinctly remember that at last year's Extra Life, Tim had to take a shot out of Kevin's belly button. Is that that's not a you're wrong? Are you
no,
just like
that's just elaborating.
Just
on
recalling.
Stuff.
Yes, that happened more than once. Cody Flick just says hi, Alex.
Hello.
That's not a you're wrong either.
Stop reading them.
Zyger said, regarding Andrea's pronunciation of Turtwig, Chimchar, and Pinplup, she actually said all three correctly. Congrats. Ooh. Oh, thanks, Zyger.
So the correction was that you didn't say them incorrectly. You weren't wrong.
Oh, this is funny. The final boss fight. I'll read this because you made a clever joke. You're wrong, Andrea. Iron Banner is out. You're wrong to be wasting time on Kind of Funny Games Daily right now. Go Guardian. I didn't realize Iron Banner was out. And the Festival of the Lost starts today.
Ooh.
The Halloween, you know about Destiny and the Halloween. Yeah.
Okay. Pumpkinheads.
I don't really like the masks because I like my Guardian's face, but sometimes they have good ones. when they did the Rahul one, it was pretty funny. Okay, let's see here. Oh, interesting. Chitty Chat Chat says, Gus Sororla from Rooster Teeth has purchased one of those $1,000 ships for Star Citizen. So if we need an opinion on the game, he might be a good resource KF can use. I will have Greg reach out to him.
We now know someone who plays the game.
Well,
or who has at least bought a ship.
Who's bought a ship.
They may not have
we
access to the
Gus
game.
I don't know if Gus actually plays. I would imagine he does. All right, let's see here. Somebody else mentioning Gus in Star Citizen. PS Wii says Discord Nitro was $4.99 a month until today when they add the games tier at $9.99 a month. The original $5 tier is now called Nitro Classic with added chat perks like GIF avatars, custom Discord tags, bigger upload limit, and the ability to use custom emotes in any server plus more. Okay. These perks are included in the games tier. That is very helpful.
So
thank
I
you.
Was right. Like I didn't was it wrong that I didn't think there was games in there before.
Correct. Thanks for the clarification. The final boss fight says the investment in Destiny was more like $500 million, according to Fortune.com. Wow. That sounds right, because Activision said it was going to be a 10-year game.
Yeah.
Or a 10-year IP or whatever. Kebabs, you and your analogy write in are not going to get read. Sorry. oh, yes, I did miss this, Kebabs. Minor miss news, the first of Spider-Man's The City That Never Sleeps DLC has been named and dated. That should have been on new dates. That's on me. Called The Heist. It comes out on October 23rd and focuses on Black Cat and also includes three new skins and their own perks and mods. The PS blog also said that the new game plus was coming in an update tomorrow, but has since been removed.
Interesting.
I also forgot this. A new on out today. Zaire says Crysis 1-3 are now backwards compatible on Xbox One. Also, Andrea, your shirt looks great as always. Thank you. It's actually a dress. Zyger says, regarding the Bitly 8-bit bonus, Bitly links are case sensitive.
Ooh.
So you have to use capital B's in both bit and bonus.
There we go.
This is more for the audio listeners.
I'll make it work on both.
Okay.
There we go.
Zaire says this is more of a PSA, but Skybound is doing a Walking Dead final season AMA on Reddit tomorrow at 2 p.m. Pacific time.
Speaking of AMAs on Reddit,
doing
one at 2 p.m. today.
That's so soon.
The IMA subreddit.
That's in 30 minutes.
Oh,
we got to get you out of here.
Maybe 2 p.m. So AMAs seem cool.
And you can find the link for that at Alex Rubens on Twitter?
Yeah, I'll tweet it. Go to Alex Rubens, R-U-B-E-N-S. Not Perfect. Like the sandwich.
Not like the sandwich.
Also in the description.
Cool. In the description.
Zaire says, new date, Super Pixel Racers is coming to PS4 and Xbox One on October 31st. Okay. Worth pointing out. Okay. Kebab says, Andrea talked about if Crunch was exclusive to video game development. Obviously, I'm sure she knows it's not. Yes, it's true. Obviously, Crunch happened. We talked about Crunch being everywhere. Kevin, Kevin, yep. He says, Kevin just mentioned Paula. So now my previous you're wrong is now irrelevant.
Stop reading them.
Another Zaire says the Hunter Call of the Wild is out today for PS4, Xbox One, and PC. For a horror game, I would recommend Visage on Steam. Also, another out today, Metal Gear Solid HD Collection available in backwards compatibility on Xbox One. So that'll be it for your wrong. Alex, one more time, where can people find out information about 8-Bit Apocalypse, the untold story of Atari's Missile Command?
You can go to missilecommandbook.com. Or bit.ly/8bitbook. I'm on Twitter, Alex Rubens.
thank you so much for coming by the show today.
Thank you guys for having me. This was awesome. It was fun to just hang out and chat about some games.
Yeah, I never get to see you anymore.
I know.
You never come to the things.
We'll have to do it more often.
Yeah, right? Come up. Come back. We'll have to get you on What's Good. Yeah. That'll be great. And thank you so much to everybody for tuning in to the show. Don't forget, tomorrow's hosts are Greg and Gary for Widow Wednesdays. And Alex, it's been our pleasure to serve.